Hey, I want to announce an important birth date of Peter Leibovich, a dear friend of the show, a great labor leader in Canada, well known from one ocean to the other. He passed away and not so long ago. July 25th is his birthday. 25th, we'll be doing Friday morning, and we'll have something to say about him at that time on that occasion. And I think I've already announced that there's going to be something at the different book lists Thursday the 25th, and it's the authority on... Her name is Carolyn Cooper, and she has written a new book, Global Reggae, and that's Thursday, 7 p.m. at 746 Bathurst. And I think we're joined now by someone from Gaza's Ark. I started to say Ork. I'm very sorry. And it's David Heap. Are you there, David?
Hi, Phil. Yes, David Heap here.
Hey, now you at Gaza's Ark, you've been doing really dramatic work, and it's such a brilliant idea to buy and refurbish a boat, and then instead of importing, coming into Gaza, you decided to sail out. Wonderful project. But lately you've had some problems just because the whole region that you're operating in are having problems. Could you tell us about that?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's been an adventure all along. It's been more than a year now. We launched the campaign a year ago, May, in 2012, and it took us a year to make the initial purchase because we were raising funds, but also because nobody had ever done anything like this before in Gaza. And, you know, we were just getting sort of hitting our stride in the rebuilding renovation process when, one predictable thing happened, which is everything in the region slows down a bit for Ramadan. And then one not so predictable thing happened, which was the coup in Egypt. And, of course, the only viable border for most Palestinians in Gaza is the one crossing at Rafah with mm-hmm. Egypt. So mm-hmm. the only place people can get out on their, think of a prison with a day pass system, right?
Yeah.
A temporary pass system. But also the only supply line in for most supplies are the tunnels at Rafah. And, initially after the coup, both were completely shut off. Now there's sort of opened to a trickle, but it's still very restricted.
I suppose that Egypt, actually, of course, is experiencing a actual dangerous political trauma. It's terrible for the Gazans, but you can understand there must be fear and anxiety about what might happen around that area when nobody's quite sure of how the power arrangement's going to work out in Cairo, I suppose.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that there's all kinds of insecurity in Egypt is not a surprise to anybody and on all sides. But what the tragedy of it is whatever happens in Egypt, it's the Palestinians of Gaza that end up paying the price.
Mm-hmm.
As people would say in some places, you know, if Egypt sneezes, Palestinians in Gaza get the cold.
Mm.
It's more than just sort of a security consequence. There's been a demonization in some of the Egyptian press of those terrible Palestinians who are causing trouble, because they identify the government that's in power, the Hamas government with the Muslim Brotherhood that was deposed in Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
Even if that was true, it's a question as everything else about the blockade, it's a matter of collective punishment. I mean, you can't
yes.
punish 1.7 million people because of who some of them happen to vote for.
Exactly.
For their government, and especially and increasingly so when more than half of those 1.7 million people are 19 or younger and never voted for anybody anywhere.
Yeah.
It's illegal in international law to collectively punish any population, but particularly close to my heart are all those young people in Gaza who are being made to suffer for things that they have no control over, right? Not
yeah.
that most of the civilian population has the control over their government at any time.
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of our project, it makes things difficult, you know, getting supplies, prices, as any time like this, prices go crazy and with speculation and supplies dry up. We did have some people who were traveling for technical support. I mean, in June, we had a wonderful experience. One of the Swedish sailors from the Estelle, so the Swedish ship to Gaza last year, a sailor from Gothenburg in Sweden, who was, he sailed last all of last summer for months, and then, like everybody else, like Jim Manley from Canada, they were kidnapped on the high seas, and they were taken to prison in Israel and then deported. And Charlie Andreessen just said, well, when he got out of prison, he said, I'm going back to work on the Ark. So he went back and spent most of the month of June in Gaza, you know, just helping out as a volunteer on the technical side of the rebuild. Because we're talking about, in a sense, a very simple people, like sailors with technical, practical skills, but also very, very committed people.
Yeah,
so
you
have
some...
get in June. He was able to get in June. We had somebody else coming in July, and, of course, they can't get in now, and there's other people who can't get in and out. But this is... I mean, this is a small problem for internationals. This is, it's a very, very large problem for Palestinians.
Yeah,
I mean,
I noticed that you point that out in the at GazaArk.org, that you say, well, we're just learning to experience this. This is a day-to-day life for Palestinians in Gaza.
Day-to-day, year-to-year.
Welcome to Gaza.
Exactly. This has been their life since the blockade now, so, you know, coming up on, 6 years here of the blockade, but also even before that, restrictions on movement is part of the Palestinian reality under occupation, you know, and when we talk about the sea blockade, it's one aspect of restrictions on freedom of movement, and let's not forget that, you know, pass laws and the ability to move around your country or the inability to move around your country were a pillar of South African apartheid, and they are a pillar of the Israeli occupation throughout Palestine. So while we focus here on the sea blockade, it is just the most acute case of restrictions on freedom of movement for Palestinians in general everywhere.
Yeah. Could you talk about this sailor? You have one of those, maybe, I don't know if he is a sailor, yes, the one who lost his hand.
Okay,
I mean, because, you know, you guys are providing, there's work too. I mean, this is, for him, it must be great.
It's not a huge project, so it's not like we're a big aid organization, and the exports will be very modest as well, but yeah, Samuel Goga is a former fisherman who, like most of the, well, all of the fishermen who are still working in Gaza, and many of them have given up because they can't make a living at it. But the boat he used to work on was attacked, by the Israeli Navy for, you know, the crime of trying to earn a livelihood by fishing. His injuries led to his hand being amputated. So he couldn't work, previously and support his family, and he's now working as a guard on the boat. And you know, another boat builder, young guy with a young family, is employed. Sami the name now. Sorry, there's a series on our site, so I'll take the opportunity to send people to
Gaza.
Mustafa. Thank you. He's got a young family as a boat builder who wasn't able to get much work boat building and is now working on the project. So there are, you know, in all, depending on exactly what work we're doing, there could be 4, 5, 6 people working on that, and of course families who depend on that, working on the project at any given time. So it's, as I say, it's not a huge employment project, but one of the differences here is the money that we're raising is being spent in Gaza on the reconstruction of this ark. So it's really, if people want to think about it, it's really a victory for the Palestinians of Gaza even before we sail, right? The fact that we're doing something there that with them that hasn't been done before, which is rebuilding a boat in the port of Gaza with the intention of sailing out with export.
And it's both not only a political, but it's a practical issue, and it's a wonderful illustration of what their lives could be like if they were not being molested by an alien naval force and permitted to live their lives and to export their goods. This is something, by the way, we all look forward to. And you are making progress. People can go to Gaza.
GazaArk.org.
GazaArk. I got to look at things when I say them. GazaArk.org. And you can actually see the progress of the work on that boat.
Yep, the sanding, the steel reinforcement, the painting, you know, the scraping and cleaning. Soon you should be seeing, hopefully, I don't want to put a time on it, but we'll say soon there should be steel reinforcements going on because it's a traditional wooden hull. Mm-hmm. And to make it ready for a sea voyage, there's some steel reinforcement going in. So it's quite exciting, the work that's going on and the technical ingenuity going into, in a place where every piece of supplies is hard to come by, you know, where they found ways to, they couldn't find new steel tanks for the fuel, but they've found some recycled ones which are being repurposed. So, you know, there are solutions that can be found with ingenuity and with international support.
Yeah.
When you talk about the life, the economy they could have, we should also talk about the producers, right? So the the Ahliya, the people's date producers organization, is keen to sell their date products. And I was actually just on a Skype call with a young man there who's very excited about stuff from the Jabalia Women's Cooperative in one of the camps in northern Gaza Strip, who are making some crafts, some armbands, and other items that they're keen to sell to as exports on the ship. So you know, this is a way soon that organizations and businesses in Canada and around the world will be able to get on board and say, we'll take some of the risk, we'll buy goods, because we have confidence in the economy of the Palestinians of Gaza.
Yeah, that's a great story. So if people go to the site, GazaArk.org, this is a chance for people to get in. They can make contributions to the people who are doing this solidarity work and build and help pay for this boat, right?
Yep. You can make a number of different kinds of contributions. There's people who are buying shares, so symbolic shares in the Ark. There's folks who
you can own part of the Ark.
You can be part owner. It doesn't have a big stock market value, perhaps, but it is of great symbolic value. Let's put it that way. There's people who are contributing specific material items. So we just had somebody who donated part of the firefighting system. U.S. person who donated part of the firefighting system. She said in memory of her father, who was a first responder to 9/11.
Wow! So that is a gee, I hope you post that story at Gaza Ark. That's a good one.
That's on our Facebook page. I can't keep track of all the stuff that's going on Gaza Ark. And people are also donating towards just as refurbishing the Ark. So there's people donating towards the wages of the workers, because that's one of our ongoing expenses, is just paying for the folks who are doing this work.
Well, and
so there's different ways of getting involved. And then later on, well, pretty soon we hope, we will have orders of products. And there, again, we need organizations or businesses who are willing to sort of put together a group order in the different countries and communities that are ready to support this.
Well, I know some businesses right here. I'm going to go approach them about this, because I know that it would be good for their stores. David Heap, congratulations on all your great work. I love going to the GazaArk.org site and seeing all the interesting people and the progress. It's something I know people can get behind. Thank you very, very much for joining us.
Thank you so much for letting your listeners know. It's always a great pleasure to talk to you, Phil.
All right, David. Thank you. Bye-bye. That's David Heap. And it's GazaArk.org. You can go to that site and get in on the activity. And they particularly need help to buy, help purchase supply and to pay the labor. And so I urge everybody to do it. I always look at this as Gaza. They have a very nice, I guess you call it a logo, Gaza's Ark on the logo, Freedom Flotilla. That's where we first heard of them. They were going sailing from Cyprus. And actually one ship, I think, went from Scandinavia. We made a long, long trip there. And, of course, there was the legendary Turkish vessel that was fired upon. This is a very creative approach. You're listening to The Taylor Report. It's CIUT, 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor, and you can write to us, taylor@ciut.fm. We have a website, taylor-report.com.